future of online TV is here.
View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit VoiceAmerica.tv today.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaSports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Keeping It Real with former NFL wide receiver and Auburn University standout, Jairus McIntyre. Are you ready to hear it live from the athletes, celebrities, and fans? Jairus, his co-hosts, and his guests will keep you laughing, thinking, and talking. Now, here's your host, Jairus McIntyre.
What's going on, everybody? We are back on Keeping It Real. I'm your host, Jairus McIntyre, and my special guest host, On my co-host Ron Mack here, you know, every Tuesday with me, man. I'm keeping it real, and we always gonna keep it real. A lot of football to talk about. Our Auburn Tigers lose their second game of the season. Travel to Arkansas to play I think a very good Arkansas team, and offense stalled, defense looked okay, but couldn't come out victorious, man. Lost the football game, and when we got those old mighty Florida Gators this coming weekend. They travel to Jordan-Hare. But just some thoughts, Ron Mack, on this game on Saturday. This past Saturday, we faced the Arkansas Razorbacks, man. You know, just give me some thoughts on what you saw in that game, and some things maybe we need to improve upon and to get better for the Gators this weekend, because I don't think it's going to be easy, even though they're down to their third quarterback.
Well, it was, like you said, it wasn't a good offensive performance. I personally have been rather hard on seeing quarterback Barrett Trotter, and you know, I was hoping that he was going to be able to prove me wrong. And this season is going pretty much like I figured. He to me is like having Chris Todd at quarterback, but to me Chris Todd had better decision making skills. I think Barrett Trotter is physically, you know, better at throwing the football and throwing, you know, a deeper and harder football than Chris Todd, but Chris Todd was way ahead of him in decision making. And with the lack of, you know, a passing game, people who we are going to play are going to load the box and not let Dyer beat them, not let McCaleb, you know, you don't have to respect the quarterback's ability to run, so that jet sweep that they run with McCaleb, they should throw that out of the playbook. I was impressed with the one or two little runs I saw Mason make, though. I really feel Mason should get some carries. You know, because he is a little bit of both. He's a little bit of flash, and he's a little bit of power. So I think he should get the ball some more. Defensively, Robinson Therese, he's a hitter, man. You have to find a way to get him on the field. Enrique Florence, he was in good position a few times, you know, to break on receivers catching balls. I really, you know, feel like we're wasting our time playing Nico Thorpe. I know Nico's been starting at Auburn for a long time, and, you know, all that good stuff. But if you go ahead and you play the young guys, it'll pay off in the long run. I love El Toro Freeman. El Toro Freeman is the best linebacker on the team. He has no business splitting time or sharing time with anybody else at the linebacker position. He should be a full-time player at linebacker, at one of the linebacker spots, and I would prefer middle because he has the speed and explosiveness to get from sideline to sideline.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that, man. Turtles, he's had big games throughout his career at Auburn. I know when they played Alabama last year in the big come-from-behind victory, he had a hell of a game. And this past week, he had a hell of a game. He always seems to have energy, and I think he brings energy to that defense. So whether it be outside, you know, Mike, Will, Sam, whatever it may be, I think he should be in the lineup starting to help that defense because he is a playmaker. And you put him along with, you know, Corey Lemonnier, number 55, who's come around and starting to look like a star player that he was supposed to be when we recruited him. And some of these young interior linemen that are getting a little push. I think the defense is promising, and I think we're starting to get it. Obviously, on offense with Barrett Trotter, very inaccurate. D'Angelo Benton didn't help him by dropping two very critical passes. Letson Kirkin dropped the pass. The speed sweep, like Ron Mack said, I mean, I wouldn't throw it out of the playbook, but they know it's coming. And me personally, and I'm gonna say, like I told Ron Mack before, I'm on here, I'm keeping it real. I'm going to keep it real. And I honestly believe from seeing Trey Mason, he definitely needs to be, I don't want to say, you know, McCaleb has done his thing at Auburn, but I think he brings a different element with speed as well as power on the speed sweep. I don't necessarily see Ontario McCaleb able to, make a move and get upfield and get those extra 2 or 3 yards the way I think a Trey Mason could actually get it, cut back, you know, make a move and get vertical up the field and use his speed as well as power. So it's going to be interesting, man. Like I said, in the future with two superstar recruits we have coming in from, I guess the one kid from Tennessee, the big power back, as well as the kid out of Daphne, Alabama, Yeldon, throw him in there with the Mike Blakely and a Corey Grant and a Michael Dyer. And I know I'm looking ahead to next year, but I mean, we're going to have 6-7 guys who are capable of running the football. And it's going to be interesting to see how that unfolds with that much speed and that much talent. Because, I mean, from what I see from McCaleb, he is a north-south speed guy, but he doesn't. I don't think he necessarily has that wiggle to be that kind of running back. I mean, last year we did have Cam Newton. If he, you know, they had to respect Cam Newton. So when he handed it, he's down the sideline. He's riding. But now it's a little different. So we'll see, man. And not to say that we don't have trust. We need to, you know, not use Ontario McCaleb. It's just saying that it's a little different when there is no Cam Newton. But I think we'll get better. Barrett Trotter did have a horrible game. He's had a couple bad games, but I think this one, was horrible. Wasn't very accurate at all. Wasn't making good decisions or whatnot, but the receivers do need to help him. And the offensive line, you know, protection-wise, looked okay. But I think that could always get better. So we got these Gators coming in, and they just, you know, came off a butt whooping themselves in a great LSU team. And they're down. They have a young quarterback just like us. He's going to be coming on the road again, just like we were. So hopefully we can contain Rainey and Dip somewhat. And pull this one out and get our fifth win going into a big, very, very tough road test at LSU. But, you know, I'm not going to think too far ahead because obviously we've got this Florida team who was ranked, who does have, you know, Florida talent, players from Florida with speed and very high recruits that Urban Meyer left Coach Muschamp. So it'll be very interesting. And hopefully, like I said, we can pull this out. It'll be a night game in Jordan-Hare, so the crowd should be electric, and it should be very, very interesting. So we will see. Ron Mack, Justin, Tim Tebow, starting quarterback with the Denver Broncos. And I know I've been, I don't want to say hard on Tebow. I just think that he's not your traditional NFL quarterback, and I think it's going to be very hard for him to be successful. Beating you just passing the football. But he is a winner. He does have that will. He does have that heart. and he has a determination to be successful at whatever he does. So I will never, ever count out Tim Tebow. Ron Mack, what do you think about the decision? I know you think Kyle Orton is not the best quarterback in the world, and you said, you know, some good and some bad about Tim Tebow. But, what do you say about the decision John Elway and Coach Fox and the management of the Denver Broncos have made to move forward with Tim Tebow as their starting quarterback for the rest of the season?
This should have been the decision from the start, and I say that because you have invested a first round pick on Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow is a winner. He's a good leader. You know, his style isn't going to be the most beautiful football you'll see, but the Broncos lack talent overall on that team. So you have to play a different kind of game. I mean, I can compare it to Cam Newton and Carolina. Tim Tebow is not going to be Cam Newton. I don't think he was ever Cam Newton. That's why I've said on this show several times that Urban Meyer had to be playing favoritism ball at Florida, because there is no way that Tim Tebow is better than Cam Newton. Not today, not yesterday, hell, not 5 years ago. So, in saying that, since you don't have a lot of talent, you have to use what you have. And you have a guy who's going to control the game. He's going to make plays for you, not necessarily with his arm, but with his feet, or like you said, with his will. And the guys in the locker room will believe in him and will follow him more so than Kyle Orton. The whole complexion of the game Sunday changed when Tim Tebow hit the field. Tim Tebow hit the field. He ran a touchdown in. They got a stop. He got the ball back. He moved the ball. It wasn't pretty. You know, it was, you know, some dumps and some quick stuff and some scrambles, but it was effective. And I think Tim Tebow can be effective at the quarterback position.
Yeah, and the crowd wants Tim Tebow as well. And I think when you have the crowd in it and the fan base that Denver has in wanting to see Tim Tebow and him being drafted in the first round and him winning football games at the University of Florida, they want him in there. And I think that, I mean, that you have to do that. Management and coaching staff, you're not winning, and you have, you know, the most popular backup probably in the history of the NFL, you got to let him play. You got to let him play. You got to see what he can do. I mean, hell, if they go off and win 2 or 3 games here in a row, then they're going to look like the genius and saying this was the plan all along and everything else like that. So I think you got to plug him in, see what he can do, use his strengths, you know, try to stay away from his weaknesses. Hopefully Brandon Lloyd can make big plays. No Sean can get Moreno can get the game, run game going a little bit. Use a little play action, get him in the boot, let him, you know, use his power run game himself, Tebow, and try to stuff it up the middle and hopefully he could be successful in the NFL. And I think he can win some games. I think it's just the trying times are going to be there, and I think it's going to be difficult because I feel that teams will stack the box and make Tim Tebow beat them, you know, with his arm. And when it comes to that, I think it's going to be difficult for him, to start off with. And I don't, you know, want people to, you know, jump off the ship and say, oh, he's this, he's the bust, he's this and that, because in actuality, he's like a rookie quarterback. I mean, he played a little bit last year, but, you know, you throw him in here now, he's still somewhat of a rookie because he doesn't even have probably the passing attempts that Cam Newton has had through his career so far, his first, you know, 5 games. I mean, I'm not sure stat-wise exactly, but, I mean, I could probably bet that in Cam Newton's first 5 games, he's thrown more passes so far than Tebow's probably thrown in his career, you know, including, you know, last year and this year included. So, you know, it's going to take time for Tim Tebow, but you know, we'll see. One team that I'm definitely impressed with and another team that I'm not impressed with, is the Detroit Lions, man. I mean, they've been in the dumps for years, you know. I mean, for years it seemed like. I was talking to Rudy Johnson the other day, and he was talking about that 0-16 season and And he didn't even want to claim he was on the team. He's like, man, I had nothing to do with that. They signed me 2 days before the season, you know. And I've definitely got to get Rudy Johnson here. I'm keeping it real, listeners. But we're talking about it, man. And it seems so short, you know, short time ago that the Detroit Lions were actually 0-16. Calvin Johnson was a part of that team. A lot of players that are there, I'm not going to say a lot, but players that were there went through that 0-16 season. And for them to start off 5-0, playing on Monday night last night, obviously, you know, I'm going to give love to the Auburn boys. Nick Fairley actually, you know, getting his first full, you know, kind of NFL experience in a game time to get a little push and get, you know, quarterback pressure and whatnot. It was good to see the Detroit Lions, man, just, you know, give that city some life in the football and kind of, you know, make it electric as it was in the Barry Sanders days. So that's a team that I'm definitely impressed with. And, I mean, and Calvin Johnson, he can't be covered. I mean, I sit there and ask myself, you know, how do they let the guy get behind him if they know he's going deep? But at the same time, I look at this guy and I'm like, okay, 6'5", 230, and runs a 4.3. I guess that's how he can get behind you. So that's that. Another team, man, that I'm definitely not impressed with is Philadelphia Eagles, man. And I know they keep shooting themselves in the foot with penalties and fumbles and things of that nature, man. But, you know, hey, we're getting close to the midpoint of the season, and they got to lose the record. So I don't know how much longer that they can go with these, you know, misfortunes and bad, you know, penalties and fumbles and false starts and whole, you know, everything. And it's going to come to a point where they're not even going to be in a playoff race. I mean, I know the NFC East is, you know, nobody's spectacular in that division, so it's still up for grabs. But they got to pick it up quick or they're going to be out in the outside, from the outside looking in. Ron Mack, we talked about the Eagles a lot. I know you're a big Michael Vick fan and you know, you like the Philadelphia Eagles just like I like the Philadelphia Eagles, especially after their, you know, after acquiring Ronnie Brown. That was my team. I was like, you know what, I'm going to ride with the Eagles this year just because I want to see Michael Vick win. You know, I want, you know, my boy Ronnie Brown to be successful. They got great playmakers. I like Andy Reid, you know, from the chance that he's given, you know, players like a Michael Vick and a Vince Young to be successful. So I said, you know what, I'm going to ride with the Eagles this year just because. And it hasn't been pretty so far, man. What do you think is going on with these Eagles, man? Because they have the talent. They have a damn near $1 billion in the secondary. One of the best quarterbacks of all time, dual threat, is Michael Vick. A great running back in McCoy.
Yeah.
The offensive line, I think, is huge. I think that's the problem. What do you think the biggest problem is with the Philadelphia Eagles?
Well, I'm gonna use the other team that you talked about to tell you the problem with the Eagles. Last night, the Detroit Lions dominated the Chicago Bears in the trenches. Dominated. Their line, Detroit's offensive line, isn't great, but they handled Peppers and the rest of those guys from Chicago. And their defensive line, The defensive line of the Detroit Lions, they were rotating about 7 or 8 guys, and they all looked alike, and they all quick, and they all big, and they all physical. The Detroit Lions are physical at the point of attack, and that's what the Eagles are not. The Eagles aren't physical at the point of attack. The Eagles are loaded with skill position players, but that's just show. You win football in the trenches. You win football at the point, you know, at the line of scrimmage. You win line of scrimmage 9 times out of 10 if you can hang on to the ball and not turn the ball over and not shoot yourself in the foot with penalties, you'll win the game. So the Detroit Lions are playing close to the vest. They're running the football. You know, they got Calvin Johnson, so if they get within the 30 yards of the end zone, even if it's 2 or 3 people there, they'll put it up. And he last night they showed a graphic where, you know, when he jumps, he's about 12.5 feet off the ground when he jumps. There isn't a corner in the league that can get up that high. Not Numde, not Asante, not my boy with the Jets. Can't nobody get up like that. So that's automatic. If I get to the 30-yard line,
I'm going to get seven because all I got to do is put it in the air to Calvin Johnson. The Eagles, like I said, they're not physical. They're making mistakes. Vic is making mistakes. He's killing them. And not just him, because it was Macklin against the 49ers. It was somebody else the week before when he got hurt. So, you know, but like you said, no one in the NFC East has a spectacular record. The team with the best record is Rex Grossman and the Washington Redskins. There's no way that they will end this season in first place in the East. So I still think the Eagles make the playoffs. Detroit, I don't think they have the cover guys to stop Green Bay, but with Sue and Farrelly coming off that ball like they coming off, man, with the ends that they have, man, and the rotation that they have it on the defensive line, they will be a tough out in the playoffs.
Okay, well, I can definitely agree with that. And speaking of the Green Bay Packers, man, and Aaron Rodgers and that team, I mean, that team is stacked. I mean, it's hard for me to say that anything can happen in the NFL, but I heard Michael Irvin said he thinks that team can go undefeated with the talent that they have in the secondary, the receivers, the quarterback, the backup quarterback, the running back, the backup running back, the O&D line. And I know the NFL has never happened. It almost did that year with the New England Patriots. And they're only 5-0, so it's a way too early to speak undefeated throughout the season. But I think anytime you have Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, it's going to be very, very difficult for that team to lose. Do you see them as the front, you know, as a favorite as of right now to take it all and go back to back?
They are. Like I said, football to me is a game of matchups. And I honestly, deep in my heart, feel that the Eagles went after Namdi, not looking forward to the season, but looking at the playoffs and saying, either A, we're going to have to go through Green Bay, or we're going to have to go through New Orleans. And either way it goes, we're going to have to stop a top-flight quarterback. And when we do that, we're going to have three bona fide corners to lock up on their three and four wide receiver sets. So with that being said, the Eagles made a move looking at the playoffs. Now, they're going to catch hell getting to the playoffs, but Green Bay did last year. Green Bay caught hell. I think it took them their last game of the season, they had to win, and boom, then they took off. So, and I think the Eagles can be the same way this year. They can go, you know, 9-7, 10-6, get in the playoffs, play the Saints in the first round, and now I'm matching up with one of the teams that I thought I was going to have to play in the first place in order to get to the NFC Championship game and the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I never really thought of it like that. I think they could probably match up man-on-man with the Green Bay Packers, but I think it comes down to, like you said before, the trenches. And I think that the Green Bay Packers, that makes them unique is the ability to have that many receivers, but also be able to run the football. And I think that's a weakness of the Philadelphia Eagles right now, stopping the run. I mean, I know Fred Jackson, you know, had a pretty big day against them on this past weekend. So if they can figure that out, man, I think that'll be a huge, huge, that'll be huge for them if they can figure out how to stop the run, because I think teams are going into it like, okay, we're going to run the ball and we'll loosen up their front seven and then, you know, start play action and start, you know, running screens and start, you know, throwing the bubble screens and start throwing, the play action pass, because I don't think they are, you know, they're not built to stop the run. And I think to be able to make it, you got to stop the run. And just like you said with Green Bay, New Orleans could do the same thing with, you know, Pierre Thomas and Mark Ingram. They can run the football.
But the thing about that, J-Mac, is when you have quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers, when you have a quarterback like Drew Brees, are they going to be patient enough to do what Tom Brady did Sunday? Tom Brady Sunday, you know, realized that the Jets out here, they trying to trick me into throwing this football. I'm a quarterback, and I want to throw this football and Walker want his numbers, and Ocho trying to get on and get him some numbers, and Branch trying to get his numbers, and Hernandez trying to get his numbers. But I'm going to come up to the line of scrimmage, and I'm going to constantly call run plays because they are baiting me. Will Rodgers have the patience to just run football all night? I don't think Rodgers has come to that point in his career where he can just come up there, see, you know, the Eagles or whoever, they trying to bait me into throwing the football, and now I'm just going to hand it off to Ryan Grant, or I'm just going to hand it off to James Starks. So that's my point with the Eagles. When it comes to Drew Brees, I don't think he's going to be patient enough just to get a ball to Mark Ingram 25 times, because, hell, he hasn't done it all year. This year, they want to throw the ball. It's an ego. To me, it's an ego thing with the young and up-and-coming quarterbacks. And, okay, well, I know they trying to bait me, but I'm going to throw it anyway because I'm just that good. And I think Aaron Rodgers probably feels that way. I don't think he'll have the patience to hand it off to Ryan Grant 20 times or 10 times in a row, hand the ball off to Ryan Grant. I don't see that happening.
Yeah. I mean, I think Aaron Rodgers now is matured enough to know that, and he'll do what it takes to win. But, you know, only time will tell. All from the NFL and back to college, who do you think is the best team in the nation? LSU or Alabama? The only two teams that I feel are, I'm not going to say number one worthy, because you have a Wisconsin and you have a Boise, and then you have Clemson, I guess, is undefeated, and Stanford with Andrew Luck, and they have undefeated teams. But, you know, I'm an SEC, through, and I feel, and from watching the defenses of these two football teams, that they're the best two teams in the country. Who would you give an early favor to?
I would probably say the best team to me overall is LSU. And Alabama's close. I think Oklahoma's close. Boise's not impressive to me. I think Wisconsin, I'm going to give them about two more weeks and watch them really good, because I think that they, with the conference that they play in, I think they have a shot to get to the big dance. I think this is probably their year to go. Now, I don't know if they have the speed on defense to match up with, you know, SEC teams, because to me they play a 3 yards and a cloud of dust type of football. But this year with Russell Wilson, they're opening it up a little bit, and they got like Al Toon's son playing wide receiver. They got running back from Florida. So I mean, offensively, I think they're good. They have three draftable linemen almost every year. So, you know, in the trenches, on the offensive line, I think they're strong. I just don't know if their defense would be able to hold up to keep them in the game.
Yeah.
So Alabama, LSU, and Oklahoma, to me, are a cut above everybody else.
Yeah, and I can agree. I like Wisconsin. Anytime you have a quarterback in a Russell Wilson, and I always, you know, thought that he was a capable quarterback of taking the team undefeated and you know, and making a run. And I think that he can do it, man. I mean, as much as people don't want to say of Wisconsin, I can very easily see them running the table and having that opportunity with that big physical offensive line, a running back, a dual threat, you know, quarterback who can run and can throw, with a good run game, some receivers, and a decent defense. They can get in there, and if they play the team from the SEC, it may be a little different, but I think they can probably slow the game down. He won't make a bad decision and make it a football game. But we'll just have to see, again, because the season is long, and they have some big games coming up. But, you know, anything can happen. I like Oklahoma as well. Oklahoma, they can, you know, score with the best of them. They're going to be physical. They have talent, you know, from, you know, recruiting through Oklahoma/Texas. They're going to have talent out there. They're going to have some speed. So we'll definitely have to see, man. I think this is going to be a very, very interesting year, because we could have a team like a Stanford, if they are to be Oregon undefeated. Boise could easily be undefeated. Somebody in the Big 12 could be undefeated, as well as the Big 10 and the SEC. So you still have a Clemson who's learning. I think they will probably lose the game. But I could very easily see a team in the SEC going undefeated, an Oklahoma or like an Oklahoma State going undefeated, and whomever wins, Stanford being undefeated. So it's going to be Boise, obviously, you know, could easily go undefeated from with that schedule. So we're going to see, man. I think this may be the first time that there may be three or maybe four teams undefeated as we have to make the decision going, you know, the BCS has to, the computers have to make quote unquote their decisions to see who's going to play each other. And, it could raise a lot of red flags and a whole bunch of hell coming close to this BCS championship, because for the most part, it always works out. It always works itself out. But this is the year that I think it may be a conflict, because last year, like we said, who do we have? We had, you know, us, we were undefeated as well as Oregon, and it wasn't Boise undefeated?
Yeah.
And that was those, it was just those three, right?
No, it was TCU as well.
Okay, TCU. So it made it easier last year because you had two, you know, I guess you could say mid-major conferences that you know, were undefeated. Then you had the Pac-10 and the SEC, and that made it easy. Okay, the Pac-10 is going to play the SEC team. But if you have a Big Ten, a Big 12, an SEC, and a Pac-10, which two conferences do you pick? Obviously, everybody's going to pick the SEC. So the SEC will go. And I think over a period, because they have to, I mean, they've won so many in a row that they have to give them the opportunity to play in that game to keep it going. But then the question is going to be who goes the Big 12, the Pac-10, or the Big 12, the Pac-12, or the Big 10, or the Big 12, whatever the hell it is, whatever. What we got? Big 12, right? Is it the Big 12 still? Yeah.
No, it's still the Big 12 until, you know, next year.
Pac-12, and then it's the Big 10, right? But aren't they adding a couple?
Yeah, it's the Big 10. It's really the Big 10, which was the Big 11 plus one, but I mean, like you said, I don't think Stanford beats Oregon. I don't think Alabama or LSU go undefeated. I think both of those teams lose a game. But the question is a 12-0 Wisconsin team better than 11-1 Alabama, or better than 11-1, 12-1 LSU?
Yeah,
Clemson is 13-0 better than Alabama at 13-1.
I very easily see a Stanford. You know, and they come to Stanford. I think Oregon does. I think I can see Stanford slowing the game down, beating Oregon. I could very easily see the winner of Alabama LSU running the table, especially if Alabama wins, because they, you know, have us at the end, and they have the SEC championship against Georgia or Florida or South Carolina, maybe. I think that LSU or Alabama could easily go undefeated, the winner. I think that in the Big Ten, I think Wisconsin can easily go undefeated. I just see that happening. But, I mean, like you said, you never know. But it may come to the point where there's 11-1 SEC team with a 12-0 Big Ten, you know, 12-0 Big 12, and then an undefeated Pac-10 or Pac-12, whatever it may be. So it's kind of like – it's going to be – I think this is going to be the year where it's chaos, because we're going to have three undefeated teams from major conferences. And somebody's going to be left out, and it's going to be somewhat to the 2004-13-0 with Auburn. But I think it may be two teams that are going to be in that situation and kind of have that argument to play in that BCS title game.
That would be something, Jay Mac. That would be something. With all this conference realignment going and people trying to set up big, you know, television blockbuster revenue stuff, man, they really need to blow this stuff up, man, and go back to an 11-game schedule and have a top 16 playoff, you know, 16 teams, you know, and get it in like that, man. That's what I'm really hoping, that going to, you know, 14 or 16 teams in a conference, which will mean, okay, your schedule just got harder because you added another big team to your schedule. You know, you're weaning out the non-automatic qualifiers by making these super conferences. You're making the non-automatic qualifier obsolete because they'll get picked up in a conference. And now all we need to do now is hash out this 16-team playoff, man, and have at it. And crown a true champion, not a computer base, you know, or a voter base on the field. You know, you win, you keep playing.
Yeah. What do you think, man? You said it plenty of times, and which we can say and we cannot say, but with Kyle Frazier, do we go with Kyle Frazier or do we stick with Barrett Trotter?
I mean, no, Kyle Frazier. I would start Barrett Trotter against Florida. If Barrett Trotter came out and played like he's played, you know, played against Arkansas or played against Clemson, I would immediately, for the second half of the Florida game, go with Clint Mosley. And after I've watched Clint Mosley for a half, I will make my decision on whether my starting quarterback will be Clint Mosley, if he performs well, or Kyle Frazier and turn to the future.
Yeah. And I do think that Clint Mosley definitely needs a shot to play quarterback in a real game before they go with Kyle Frazier, because you can't go with Kyle Frazier and then kind of go back to a Trotter or a Mosley. I think once you go with Kyle Frazier, then he's your guy the rest of the season and next season
and the year after.
Yeah, but thing is, though, I don't want to do it prematurely, because with that being said, if he becomes a starting quarterback right now, then he's going to play, you know, against Florida. He's going to go on the road to LSU. He's got to play against a great Alabama defense. I don't want that man's, you know, psyche to get messed up. And I think that's why they're gradually working him in there. And I definitely would like for Clint Mosley to get a chance, because we don't know what he's capable of. The staff knows. But the staff, well, you will never really know until you see a player out there, you know, with the lights on. I mean,
reason I want to see Clint Mosley is because, you know, coaching staff made it as if it was the coaching, I mean, the quarterback battle was so close and it took so long to pick a quarterback. And if it was that close, then I feel like the guy should have his chance. I feel like, you know, he should get an opportunity against Florida. If Barrett Trotter comes out and plays bad, he should play in the second half against Florida. After he played in the second half against Florida, he may even start against LSU, which means you would break Kyle. If he didn't perform, you would break Kyle Frazier in against like Ole Miss or Samford or somebody like that, and then you work him to Georgia and Alabama. Because if we lose another game, then we can hang it up for winning the West. And right now, I think that is the only thing that's saving. I think the only reason Trotter's still starting is because we're technically not out of it, because Arkansas still has to play LSU. They still have other hard games. I think they got South Carolina, you know, so they still have some rough games. So, and they have one conference loss already. They lost to Alabama. So, you know, if they lose another game, we're ahead of them automatically. So I think that is the hang up with keeping Trotter as the starting quarterback. But I think if he comes out and lays an egg in the first half, we should go with Mosley, check him out for a half. If he plays decent, we should check him out for a game, get him LSU. If he doesn't play well against the best defense in the country, we can say, Clint Mosley, you had your opportunity. You played the second half against Florida, played the whole game against LSU. You've had your chance. Now we're going to the young guy.
Okay, off them Auburn Tigers for a quick second. Now, what's up with them Florida State Seminoles, man? You know, we know big cousins committed to the Florida State Seminoles, and hey, I'm down here in Florida or whatnot, and
they have talent, and this is supposed to be the year they kind of turn the curve. We know the quarterback got hurt, EJ Manuel, you know, bad luck with that. But he came back and played pretty good last week, but these guys are 2-3 now. And, you know, obviously Jimbo hasn't been there too long. Obviously as the head coach, I'm taking up for Bobby Bowden. And it always seems that the Florida State Seminoles are supposed to be on the upcoming and about to be back the way Florida State was, you know, in the early, you know, mid 80s, early 90s, you know, through the mid 90s or whatnot. Well, late 80s, early 90s, mid 90s, whatever it may be. What's up with the Noles, man? I mean, I don't know if you've been keeping up with them too tough. I just know that they're 2-3, and they lost to Lake Forest. It's Florida State supposed to be back to be Florida State. I mean, they get all these big-time recruits, got a good staff down there, you know, with Eddie Grant, and got Damon Craig, and some other former players that they've had at Florida, you know, that play for Florida State or whatnot. But Florida State, the 2-3 record is not, you know, showing – you know, from the talent that they have. I mean, what's going on down there? If you had to take a guess from what you see,
to me, it's like looking at Auburn in the mirror, man. They were supposed to be good, okay, but really they're a year away. Their quarterback, you know,
no,
last
you
year,
can't say like Auburn because we were. I mean, before the season, we were
in the NFL draft, and Manuel played some, but he didn't play much. Kind of reminds you of who? Barrett Trotter. We had a first round quarterback.
Auburn, because we weren't supposed to.
Trotter got in some games and some blowout situations, and that's it. Barrett Trotter. He's a junior who hasn't played much football.
But where I'm at. I hear what you're saying, but what I'm saying is this though: we were supposed to be okay, but they were supposed to be like 10 good is what I'm saying. So it's like
no, they weren't. Jay Mack.
Look
at all the teams that's playing well, man. Oklahoma, their quarterback been playing for 2 years. Alabama, they're breaking in a new guy. But LSU, the guy who's playing there, he's been there 3 years. He played against Auburn at Auburn almost like twice. So the teams who are playing well, they got a quarterback that's in the Heisman. Look, he playing well. Wisconsin, they got Russell Wilson. They got experienced quarterbacks, man.
What I'm saying is Florida State, their expectations with the talent that they've had and
unrealistic expectations. Now, next year, they can start in the top five because Manuel beat them play the whole year, and then they'll have another recruiting class.
But Manuel played. He started like 8 games last year. He started. Like if Barrett Trotter would have started five games last year, he wouldn't have an excuse now to be like this is his second, you know, second or third road start or he's a young quarterback because he would have played. EJ Manuel started about 8 games last year when Christian Ponder went down, and that was the whole ordeal of how Christian Ponder went first round when he missed 6, 7, 8 games. So EJ Manuel has started 6, 7, 8 games in his career before this year.
what is 6 games when the kid at Boise has won 40 games? What is 6 games when the Andrew Luck has won 20-something games?
No, I understand that. I'm thinking of
– it all boils down to the quarterback. You know,
how many games has Todd Boyd is surrounded by talent the same way EJ Manuel was surrounded by talent at Florida State? It's 4 or 5 stars, at, you know, cats with speed. At Florida State,
all 4 or 5 stars are not legit. You know, people right now, you know, I love Auburn. I love it. D'Angelo Benton, they said he was a 4-star. I don't see it. Trevon Reed, so far, they say he was a 4-star. I don't see it. Now, those are, you know, when you look at these guys,
I understand what you're saying.
24/7 sports. You're talking about dudes who ain't. They're not more qualified than you or I to evaluate talent.
No, Todd Boyd. Todd Boyd for Clemson, right? Okay.
Yeah.
he's leading his team, and he hasn't started, I don't think, that game. I don't think he started last year. He didn't start, but he's leading his team. He has about he has about the same amount of talent that E.J. Manuel has, right or wrong. I mean, they got a tough freshman in Milwaukee, but for the most part, they got cats with speed that could play ball just like Florida State. I'm asking, why is it that Florida? So there's really no excuse for them to be 2-3. I mean, they lost to great teams in Oklahoma as well as Clemson, but they lose to Wake Forest as well.
They don't have the experience, man. Experience plays a part. That's why I'm telling you. Auburn got 4 and 5-star guys. Corey Lemonnier, all these guys. But they don't have experience.
Florida State is using those 4 and 5-star players.
Experience, and that's what Florida State's gonna do. Florida State right now, they're getting their 4 and 5-star players experience.
Florida State has experienced players all across the board, from the O-line to the running backs to the D-line to the DBs. They have experienced players on their football team. I'm saying their expectations this year were to be a top 10 team and maybe next year win it all. Whereas now they're sitting at 2-3.
Can I ask you a question, J-Mac? If they have experienced players, right,
and they have good athletes,
why are they losing?
There's only one other phase
in the game that you can blame it on. Why are they losing?
That's why I'm asking you. Florida State was supposed to be the year that they turned the corner to become all that Florida State of old, and next year, when E.J. Manuel was a senior, was supposed to be the year that they're pretty much preseason number one to win it all. But as of right now, when you look at Florida State, they're 2-3. Okay, they're 2-3. They have juniors as well as seniors and a lot of young players as well on their team. I'm asking you, why is that?
You got to be coaching. It has to be coaching. If they have experienced players and they have talent, then it's the coach's fault. Got to be. I mean, that's the only other thing it could be. Oklahoma's probably one of the top three teams in the country, so that's not a bad loss. Clemson was not supposed to be that good, but what the guy at Clemson has done, he did what, you know, Malzahn did. He came in, he simplified the offense, he got a dual threat guy quarterback, and he simplified the game. If it's open, throw it. If it's not, tuck it and run it. And they're winning ball games. They got a couple young freshmen in who are truly 4 and 5-star, who the recruiting services were not wrong about. And there you go. To me, to my knowledge, Florida State, a guy, I can't pronounce his name, Farouken or some junior college guy who was considering Auburn, he's at Florida State, and he starts at like left guard or left tackle for them. So, you know, he's coming from junior college. He has no college football ACC experience. Like you said about E.J. Manuel, okay, so what if he started 5 or 6 games? That's in the grand scheme of things, that's not much. At receiver, Florida State's not what they used to be. On the defensive line, they have some experience. You know, at the linebacking core, they okay. You know, in the secondary, they okay, but they still young. They got Greg Reed, who like a sophomore. You know, they still got young guys who are gaining experience. I always thought that next year would be the year for Florida State. Next year, they'll start in the preseason top 5, and they about won't lose a game. But this year, I didn't see that. I didn't see that for Florida State, because you got a quarterback who done started 5 games. You got, you know, a couple of running backs that's okay. They're just okay. They're an okay team. They're not good.
Yeah, I just try to figure out the problem there at state. We got a big one coming up this weekend with these Gators, man, with these Florida Gators, man. My dog, T-Rob, is the defensive back coach there. So, obviously, I want to try to put it on those Florida Gators. Pretty good. Hopefully we can come out, man, victorious on this big night game on ESPN. Crowd's going to be rocking. It's going to be live, man. I just, you know, can't. It's going to be a great, great atmosphere, man, for college football. And for us, you know, we're still in the top 25. Hope we can move up with the big, big win this weekend against the Florida Gators.
It shouldn't be, hopefully, because you're playing a team that is starting a true freshman.
It doesn't matter from what I saw on our offense. Hopefully, we need hope. We definitely need hope.
J-Mac, this is a game with John Brantley. I can say, okay, yeah, he done started about 15, 17 games. So, yeah, you need some hope, J-Mac, because, you know, they got something that we don't have at Auburn, an experienced quarterback. But in the game, the way it's set up now, Auburn is supposed to beat Florida. If you lose to Florida, you have lost to a team that you're better than.
No, but see, okay, yes, true freshman quarterback, but I'm looking at it from the standpoint of our offense was horrible last week, and we're playing against some athletic defense. Now, if we get in the rhythm and we get it going early, then it won't be a problem. But hopefully is what I'm saying. Hopefully we get everything settled, get our receivers settled in, because we didn't have anybody to throw the ball to. Like, I looked out there out wide, and I'm looking like there's not a playmaker out here that will make a play on the ball and do something with it. You know, so, and from what I saw from Trevon Reed was a million times better than what I saw since he's been out. I mean, he may have not been, you know, looking like the future Percy Harvin, the whole Auburn Nation thought. But, I mean, he would catch the ball, or he would get 4 or 5 yards after the catch if he made the catch.
I got one more thing to say about Auburn and the receiving corps. Now, there are a lot of people, Auburn people, who may listen. They may get upset when I say this. Those guys that we're looking at play wide receiver, D'Angelo Benton and Wisner and guys like that, this year they weren't even supposed to play. Stallworth, because if Antonio Goodwin and Sean Kitchens were still at Auburn, had not did that stupid crap, and were still at Auburn, they would be playing. So we would look more talented at the wide receiver position. Instead of Stallworth missing blocks, that would be Sean Kitchens, a guy who's 6'2.5", 6'3", 215 pounds, laying that block down, instead of a guy 5'10", 175 pounds. So when they did that, just like the linebacker position, Jessel Curry, to me, out of Jessel Curry, Ra-Ra White, and Jake Holland, Jessel Curry was the best linebacker that we got that year. Physically, he was the best linebacker we got. He was able to move, get to the football, but he's no longer on the team. So the bad recruiting by Tommy Tuberville in the end, for one. And for two, the important people who these coaches really depended on not upholding their end of the bargain, man. So that's why you look out wide and you don't see a playmaker. Because if Antonio Goodwin was there or Sean Kitchens was there, you would look out wide and you'll see a playmaker.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. I'm just going off of what we see in the Windsor and the Trevante Stallworth, and you know the young guys not picking it up. I'm just going off, and even Emory Blake, he's a playmaker. He's not super explosive, but he's very consistent, and he makes plays when we need to make plays. I mean, he's our best receiver by far. So we didn't even have that last week, or Trevon Reed. So it's kind of like, damn. But with them back and we get to clicking, then it won't be so hopefully. But if they're not back, we're going to need hope, because that means we're depending on, you know, D'Angelo Benton that hasn't really done anything. Trevante Stallworth, who's okay. You know what I mean? A Philolesser Kirkin who will catch the ball, but it's not going to, you know, freak you and take it to the house. You know, so I think when we get everybody back, not to say everybody, but if we can get Quan Brayman in the mix, we can use, you know, Trey Mason, we can get Emory Blake back rolling the way he was, then I will feel a little more comfortable as far as offense, because we are playing an athletic defense that will be able to make plays. I mean, I don't want to count out their defense. Now, offensively, it's going to be tough for them because they have young receivers as well. They have a young quarterback who has, you know, a lot of ability, both backups, but haven't played a lot in the SEC, and they have two very fast running backs. So it's like, I don't want to say hopefully, but I'm hoping that we come out on all cylinders firing and playing good football
so we can, you know, win this game and be 5-2 heading down to Baton Rouge. So, you know, we will see. And we'll be back on Keeping It Real next Tuesday, or this coming Tuesday, you know, whatever, from a week from today, same time. As always, with the host, with the co-host Ron Mack on Keeping It Real, to talk about this Florida game, and hopefully
call us, Rose Green. Give us a call, baby. We miss you, Rose.
Hopefully we are. Hopefully we are here talking about a big time victory for them Auburn Tigers. Rose Green, call in. We know your cousin number 5, Marcus Roberson. I know you want to talk about the game. Call in sometime, man. You've been missing ever since you said Auburn was going undefeated, man. We all diehard Auburn fans. We diehard Auburn people.
For it's all good, Rose Green. We ain't gonna hold it against you, baby.
Call in, man, because you know when you call in, Ron Mack, go eat your behind up. Man, we out of here on Keeping It Real, man. Stay blessed, everybody. God bless. Rest in peace, Al Davis. Just win, baby. We out of here on Keeping It Real.
Thanks for listening this week. Tune in to Keeping It Real with Jairus McIntyre again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel. Until then, keep it real. Keep it real.